We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
The weather in the Midwest today. Expect dry weather to continue through tomorrow, along with seasonably cool temperatures. The remnants of Tropical Storm Lee over southern Mississippi will continue to drift to the north over the next couple of days. This will bring clouds and showers to areas near and south of the Ohio River Valley through midweek. Scattered showers will spread into Indiana tomorrow and into Illinois on Thursday, and then into Missouri and portions of Iowa and Wisconsin Friday and Saturday. High temperatures will reach the upper 60s to mid-70s this afternoon. Low temperatures overnight will range from the low 40s in Wisconsin to the low 50s in southern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, sunny and breezy. The high 73, the wind out of the northeast at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to around 30 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear and cool with a low of 48. The wind will be from the north around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, the high 75. The wind from the north at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 55. The wind will be from the north around 10 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. The high will be in the low 70s. The wind out of the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night and Friday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a low Thursday in the upper 50s and the high Friday in the low 70s. Temperatures across Illinois and Indiana at the top of the hour were in the 60s. Illinois reporting sunny to mostly sunny skies across the state. In Indiana, a mix of clouds and sun. 65 degrees at the top of the hour at Bloomington and Rockford. 64 at O'Hare and Mattoon. Carbondale reported 67 degrees. At South Bend, it was 66. Lafayette and Kokomo reported 63 degrees. Indianapolis did not report at the top of the hour. Terre Haute checked in with 64 degrees. Willard Airport had a temperature of 65, the sky sunny, the dew point 44, the relative humidity 46%, the wind out of the northeast at 13 miles per hour with gusts to 24, and the barometric pressure 30.13 and falling. And at 12:39, 66 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is sunny. Today we begin a series of features leading up to the 10th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. We're looking at the reaction and the long-term repercussions in East Central Illinois. The emotional aftershock from the attack brought a lot of people together, even political opponents. Illinois Public Media's Tom Rogers revisits a product of that cooperation 9 years after the first seeds were sown.
Literally, seeds were sown here in Northeast Champaign County's Riverbend Forest Preserve. In 2002, a year after the 9/11 attacks, it was barely developed. It was a recent acquisition for the County Forest Preserve District. Today, there's a picnic shelter, trails, and a pier jutting out into a lake made out of a former gravel pit.
And I promise, it'll be a short walk.
I'm driving in the park with Champaign County Forest Preserve District naturalist Dan Olson, and we come across what was once an open field.
What we're standing in would have been row crop agriculture, corn and soybeans rotated in. And so over the years as we developed and also did a lot of conservation efforts out here, we decided to dedicate this as the 9/11 Grove.
A stand of trees meant as a natural monument to the people who died at the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the plane crash site in Pennsylvania. 9 years ago, officials symbolically planted the first tree in a one-year anniversary ceremony.
Yeah, it was pretty vivid that day of having everybody out here. And then, yeah, in 10 years, we'll get this kind of growth. That ash is doing really, really well. We're glad to see that. And the Kentucky coffee trees are actually doing pretty well, too, considering.
In 2002, they mowed around that symbolic first ash tree. Now, it and the others are surrounded by tall grasses and wildflowers and a host of little trees. Some of them were planted directly from seed rather than saplings. Others came up on their own. They all look tiny for being several years old. But Olson says that's nature at work.
And one of the reasons it takes a while is a lot of these do get nibbled down by wildlife, but they do come back every year. And as I think Aldo Leopold said at one time, really, when we look at a tree, an oak especially, it's probably a lot older than we realize because it may have been chewed down by wildlife for 15 years.
The 9/11 Grove idea began with a small group of Republican and Democratic elected officials. Politically, they may be at odds, but for State Representative Chapin Rose and a friend, former Urbana Alderman Milton Otto, September 11th was sobering. Politics temporarily didn't matter.
After that, you know, you saw what Americans do best, which is we come together in times of national trial like that. And, you know, Mill and I just got to start talking about, you know, there ought to be something locally, you know, that we could do.
They called in Bob Tolson, the longtime general manager of the Champaign Park District. They thought up ideas for a living memorial as long as it could be supported by private donations. Tolson says the money was slow coming in at first.
And there was one person that came to us, wanted to plant a tree in front of every school building in the county. But we weren't able to do that because of lack of funds.
One tree was planted at Champaign's Zond Park, but the Forest Preserve District offered its new Riverbend property, and it went from there. An interpretive sign went up on the fifth anniversary in 2006. And even though the 9/11 Grove Development Fund has been dormant for a while, District Spokeswoman Andy Chestnut says it's still an active project.
We haven't really publicized it lately. Perhaps with the 10th anniversary coming up, it would be a good time to publicize it again.
And you still spend money out here, right?
We definitely spend money, you know, planting trees, and a lot of our money goes into natural resources. So anytime anybody wants to help us along, it would be greatly appreciated.
Its supporters don't want the intention of the Memorial Grove to be forgotten. But now it's time for its trees to blend into the surrounding nature. I'm Tom Rogers, Illinois Public Media.
You can read more about the Memorial Grove and take a video tour on our community engagement website at willconnect.org. All plants need nitrogen to grow, and a new study says some plants get this nutrient from a surprising source. Conventional wisdom believes nitrogen for plants starts in the air and is converted by microbes in the soil into a usable form. But a report in the journal Nature finds that some nitrogen comes directly from rock. NPR's Richard Harris has the story.
It's been such a central fact in botany that for many decades nobody has bothered to question whether plants rely on the air for their nitrogen. Yet there have been hints that the conventional wisdom is wrong.
If you go into most forest ecosystems, for a long time it's been recognized that there's way too much nitrogen accumulating in soils and plants than could be explained by the atmosphere.
Benjamin Holton at the University of California, Davis, says you can add up all the nitrogen captured by microbes and you can add in the nitrogen particles that fall in the forest in the rain, but you still come up short. So where else could forest nitrogen be coming from? Holton was chatting about this with a colleague one day, and they started mulling over an idea that had been discarded long ago. That's the notion that significant amounts of nitrogen could leach out of sedimentary rocks. It seemed like a long shot to revisit this idea, but what the heck?
So we took a trip out to this mountain in Northern California, the Klamath Mountain Range, and it's underlain by this sedimentary rock that was laid down at the time of dinosaurs and has a lot of nitrogen in it, and took a couple of samples, and my graduate student, Scott Morford, brought those samples back, and I'll never forget it. He came running into my office, and I was absolutely shocked.
The trees contained twice as much nitrogen as the scientists expected, and chemical tests showed that the nitrogen was coming directly from the ancient rock. In contrast, trees growing nearby on rocks that didn't contain nitrogen contained a lot less of the stuff. For scientists like Holton, who are trying to understand nutrient cycles on a global scale, it's a huge deal to realize that sedimentary rocks are so important for plants.
It would increase the amount of nitrogen we think is available to terrestrial plants by about a third.
This affects how the forests of the world could react to climate change. Trees are gobbling up a fair amount of the carbon dioxide that we pour into the atmosphere, but scientists have been worried that in the next few decades they'd start to run out of the nitrogen they need to keep fueling this growth spurt. It turns out, maybe not.
This could act as a big source of fertilizer that allows plants to continue to pull some of our human CO2 emissions out of the atmosphere.
Holton and his colleagues make their case in the latest issue of the journal Nature. And assuming what they found in California is true around the world, everyone who studies natural plant nutrition is going to have to change their thinking. Ecologist Kathleen Treseder at the University of California, Irvine, says she's focused much of her effort on understanding the microbes that capture nitrogen from the air and deliver it to plants.
But now there's a whole other source that I need to consider. I need to think about how that might change under different environmental conditions. It's not just the microbes that are operating.
Does it sort of take the microbes down a notch?
Well, I study microbes, so I don't want to say that necessarily, but it just adds an additional level of complexity.
And she adds, it means that the biology textbooks that students use everywhere are just plain wrong.
Textbooks are always being outdated, so I'll have to add an extra slide or two to my lectures.
But this isn't just a little sort of tweak of a fact on page 17. I mean, this is kind of a central idea, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. So it's very exciting.
And it's a reminder of the rich reward that can occasionally come from challenging your assumptions. Richard Harris, NPR News.
I'm David Thiel from WILL-TV. Join me this October for a Friends of WILL tour of London, Yorkshire, and Wales. We'll see stately homes and splendid scenery with connections to some of our most popular TV programs. Three-night stays in each of our locales offer us plenty of free time. Call us at 217-333-7300 or visit will.illinois.edu for more information.
Tune in to WILL-TV Wednesday evening for special programming to mark the 10th anniversary of September 11, 2001. First at 8, follow the five-year construction of the National September 11th Memorial Museum on NOVA, Engineering at Ground Zero. Then at 9, explore how people's beliefs and non-beliefs have been challenged since September 11th on Frontline, Faith and Doubt at Ground Zero. That's Wednesday evening on WILL-TV.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, September the 6th, 2011. The birthday of writer Alice Siebold, born Madison, Wisconsin, 1963, grew up near Philadelphia. She was the weird one in an otherwise normal family. Went to Syracuse University, and during her first semester, she was attacked and raped near campus. She helped bring the rapist to trial. She got him convicted, went back to college. She was in the creative writing program. But after graduation, she floated around. She did drugs. She worked a whole series of odd jobs, tried to write, never finished anything. When she was